This is the Bob Soucy Show on Patriots.com Radio.
Parade in the backfield off Brady's left hip. Amendola started in motion. Brady takes the snap, rolls right, throws to the end zone, catches Brady, touchdown, Danny Amendola!
The Bob Soucy Show is your source for in-depth Patriots coverage and all things NFL. Join Bob for exclusive interviews, statistical breakdowns, and the best coverage of your New England Patriots.
Gostkowski trying to win it in overtime. The snap, the spot, the kick is airborne to the upright, and the kick is a game winner!
Join the conversation by calling the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email the show at webradio@patriots.com.
Left foot forward for the quarterback, hands extend, takes the snap, retreats in the pocket, under a rush, throws across the middle, touchdown, Rob Gronkowski!
Now, here's your host, the radio voice of your New England Patriots, Bob Soucy.
And hello again, everyone. Welcome to the show. And we begin this week two for the Pats, of course, try to rebound from the season-opening loss in Miami as they prepare for the Minnesota Vikings this Sunday with a special teams captain. Matthew Slater has been a Pro Bowler for the Patriots the last several years, and right off the top is here to make time for us in his seventh season as New England Patriot. And Matthew, let's get to the week for the Patriots, preparing for the Vikings, of course, and coming off that loss against the Dolphins. How do you process what took place last Sunday, learn from it, get better from it, and then build on it, the positives, and of course diminish the weaknesses now as you're preparing for the Vikings?
Well, I certainly think there were a lot of things that came up last week that we can learn from, good and bad. We've got to try to build on what we did, obviously. But the biggest thing for us is to turn the page. Last week is over. We're fully focused on playing the Vikings, and that's it. So our focus is on preparing for Minnesota, improving upon what we did last week, and moving forward.
I think a lot of people on the outside, including those of us in the media, usually expect that there's going to be some fire and brimstone speech after a tough game. You're a leader of this team, no question about that. How do you define leadership in moments like today, when you're rebounding from a loss and building for the next game?
I think it's more about what we do as leaders on this team as opposed to what we say. It's easy to get up on the table and give a rah-rah speech, but sometimes that does nothing. It's about going back to work today, going back to the basics, and trying to improve upon what we're doing as a football team.
And it certainly doesn't get any easier. We were talking off air about the Vikings. This is a very impressive team, 4-0 in the preseason under Mike Zimmer, the new head coach, who spent 14 years in the NFL as a defensive coordinator. And what we've seen, of course, the outstanding Adrian Peterson, Cordarrelle Patterson, playmakers on offense as expected, but defensively too, very sound unit that kept the St. Louis Rams out of the end zone last Sunday and even produced a defensive score. How impressive were the Vikings to you watching them on tape?
This is a tough football team. When you think about tough football teams, they run the ball well, they defend the run, and they are great in the kicking game. And this team is every one of those things. So, obviously, you mentioned Adrian, and it's no mystery what he is and what he's done over the course of his career. Their defense flies around. They have a lot of playmakers. And then, obviously, Cordarrelle Patterson and his gang have had a great deal of success. So, it's going to be a tough week for us.
We'll talk about Patterson as a return man, but with the offense, of course, playing an instrumental role for the Minnesota Vikings. And, you know, as noted, the defense so impressive for Minnesota on the other side. Five sacks, including two by Everson Griffin. It's a very much a scheme like Miami used. Kevin Coyle, the defensive coordinator for the Dolphins, of course, is off the coaching tree of Mike Zimmer's, worked for Zimmer in Cincinnati. What are the parallels you draw between the two teams?
Well, I think defensively there are some similarities there. But, you know, we don't want to get too caught up in the comparisons and how they're similar because they are different. It's different players out there with different abilities and different techniques that we have to play to. So we can learn some things from prior games, but the biggest thing for us is to learn our opponent this week. It's an opponent we're not very familiar with. Having only played them once in the last 7 years. So we've got to go out and try to do everything we can to prepare for this group of guys and what this group of guys does.
Take me inside the mind of a guy who first as a wide receiver is studying the opposing secondary, and in particular a secondary like this that you're not really familiar with, haven't gone up against these guys a lot, if at all, in the past. What are the things you're going to look for in that time that you spend reviewing video?
Well, the film study is so huge this week. It's big every week, but this week we don't know these guys. there are very few players left over from the last time that we played them, and we have a new cast of characters. So the biggest thing for us is just learning the strength of our opponents, what they do well, you know, how they have success, and we've got to study that and be ready for it come Sunday. So as the receivers, as we study film this week, we look for, you know, the strengths of the corners, quickness, speed, on the line of scrimmage, technique, whatever it may be. You know, we've got to look for their strengths and do the best we can to prepare for it.
One of those guys, Harrison Smith, had an 81-yard interception return for a touchdown last Sunday against the Rams, one of three scores in his career off pickoffs. What stands out about him for you?
He just seems to always be around the football. He's a natural playmaker, and I think he's proven that ever since he's been in this league. He's an aggressive player. He seems to be a heady player, and, you know, what can you say about the guy? He seems to be a very solid football player as you watch the tape, and we're going to have to know where he is each and every snap.
And Captain Munnerlyn is an experienced player you have gone against as recently as last year with the Carolina Panthers. He's a little guy by NFL standards, but he really seems to play with a big heart and really as well a big head for the game. Seems to be a really smart cornerback who's made a lot of big plays in his career.
Don't be fooled by the measurements with him. He, like you said, he plays bigger than he may measure out. You know, there's no replacement for competitiveness and heart. And he's got plenty of it. He's an aggressive player. He's not afraid to compete. And that's what this league is about, and that's why he's had success in this league.
We're with Matthew Slater, special teams captain of the Patriots, and mentioned Cordarrelle Patterson, a dynamic player who rushed for more than 100 yards on three carries offensively, and as a kick returner in this league last year, had run backs as a rookie of 105 yards and 109. And even watching him Sunday against St. Louis on the opening kickoff, he's 9 yards deep, he's near the pylon, and yet he still takes it out. Is that fearlessness something that stands out for you?
No question. This guy is not afraid to make a play. He's not afraid to take chances, and in result, he's had some big plays. So we're going to have to account for him every time we kick the ball off. We know that we have our work cut out for us. He presents a lot of different problems because of his side-speed combination as well as his just flat-out want to. So it's going to be a tough week for us. We have to have a good week of preparation, and hopefully we can have success against him on Sunday.
And Marcus Sherrill's the punt returner, another guy who's dangerous. He's got a couple of career scores.
Yes. You know, what interesting stat about these guys, they were number one in the league last year in kickoff return and number two in punt return. So both of these guys are more than capable. They're two different guys. One's a bigger guy with a lot of speed, and one's a smaller guy with a lot of speed and quickness. So we've got to study them both well. We've got to be prepared. And like I said, it's going to be a dogfight for us.
And at the same time, while you're preparing for what they do, how have you addressed what you did or didn't get done last week, in particular in special teams?
Well, I think for us, and I've said this a few times, is it's about going back to the basics. Things that we've been taught from day one, we have to go back and do better. Simple execution. And it's not one guy, it's everybody. Everybody's got to do their job just a little bit better. We can't afford to have momentum swing plays go against us. We've got to be the ones making those momentum swing plays, and you know, I'm confident that the guys are going to get it fixed and we're going to figure it out.
Our guest is Matthew Slater. Of course, you know him as a Patriots wide receiver and special teams captain who's established himself certainly in the NFL as one of the best at what he does. His father, one of the all-time best, Jackie Slater, 20 years in the league as a Ram. Off the field or on the field, and when it comes to football in particular, what did you learn from your dad? I mean, was he more of a help in handling the off-the-field lifestyle or teaching you the work ethic, the approach to the game, as opposed to maybe the scheming and the fundamentals, the techniques of the game?
Right, well, obviously there's not a lot that I can learn.
Yeah, I was going to say, not you know,
technique-wise.
You're a good blocker, though. I've seen the Patriots employ you in those tight formations in running situations.
I try to do my best Jackie Slater impression. But, you know, I think the biggest thing that I've learned from him is the work ethic and the respect that you have to pay this game. This game owes none of us anything. You have to go out and earn it. You have to go out and put a good day's work in each and every day you go out there. And that's one thing that I learned from my father as a youngster, watching him prepare for the grueling season every year. And then as I've gotten older and the dialogue that we have, it's all about, you know, respecting this game, having the right mindset, the right approach, and coming out and earning it every day.
Matthew, I thought of you last year during the Hall of Fame induction ceremony in Canton when Larry Allen was inducted, and he brought up your dad as his idol when he was speaking on stage. What did that mean to you?
That was very humbling. You know, I think as a youngster, I didn't really appreciate the type of career that my dad had because to me it was just dad. But to be able to have experiences like those and to be able to play in this league and know how hard it is to play in this league, I really have that much more respect for him and appreciation for what he was able to accomplish over the course of his career.
I'm always curious talking to second or third generation professional athletes because I find often that their upbringing when it comes to sports in particular is a lot different than a lot of people would envision. You grow up around the game maybe, but at the same time, kids for the most part, it seems, who've gone on and succeeded in the pros weren't pressured to do so. Was that the case for you? Did your dad more or less encourage you rather than push you into football?
No question. Actually, as a youngster, my dad did everything he could to keep my brother and I away from football, knowing the violent nature of the game, knowing the risk involved. But once we expressed our interest in the game, he was very encouraging. Never forced us to do anything that we didn't want to do. Never pressured us to do anything out of the ordinary. He was just very supportive and very encouraging and always took a step back. He never wanted to be in the spotlight. He wanted it to be about my brother and I and us enjoying the game, and we certainly appreciated that.
In though the positions are very different, one assumes that genetically you have the athletic genes in you, but from your mother's side, what did you gain from that part of the partnership to help raise you and your family?
Hopefully I got her brains. my mom has definitely been the backbone of, I think it's safe to say, my dad's career and my career. And, she's always there for emotional, mental support, and she's a very tough lady, a very smart lady, and I know my dad and I both wouldn't have been half the players we are if it wasn't for her.
With Matthew Slater, our final moments with the longtime Patriot and a special teams captain for this team. It's well known that you're a very spiritual person, and as we can hear, you're very soft-spoken and thoughtful, someone who seems introspective as well. How do you reconcile the violent nature of the game you play, and in particular your role, because you're a gunner on special teams. You've got to get down there, and when the opportunity calls for it, you've got to take out a guy who's really defenseless in that position, returning a kick or a punt. How do you reconcile that with the personality that you have?
Well, I think, and you mentioned my faith, I think a lot of times that gets misunderstood as, because we're people of faith that we have to be soft and passive, and that's not the case. I feel like I have a responsibility because of the opportunity that I've been given to go out and play the game with everything that I have. And when I go to strike a guy, I never am striking him to hurt him, but, I have a job to do. And I'm not afraid to go out there and do whatever it takes to get that job done. And, like I said, so fortunate and blessed to be in the position that I'm in. I know there are a lot of guys over the years that would love to be doing something in regards to the NFL any way that they could. So I have to keep that in mind, and I have an obligation to give this team and my teammates everything that I have on each and every snap.
As we close out, let me ask you about the job that you have to do, for example, the rest of the day. It might be assumed that your work day is done. What happens after you leave the facility?
Well, I won't leave the facility at least for another 3 hours.
Well.
I've got to... There's a long regiment that goes into each and every day. I think, weightlifting is something that I'll do before I leave here today. And then body maintenance. Over the course of the season, it's so important that you take care of your body, that you give yourself the best chance that you can to recover come the following Sunday. So there's no rush to get out of here. You have to do the little things and give yourself a chance to have success come Sunday.
And regardless of what took place in the season opener, one shouldn't lose faith in these Patriots. Tell us about the state of mind of this team right now moving forward on Minnesota and why there's reason for confidence for this team.
Well, we really believe and have a lot of confidence in ourselves, and rightfully so. I believe that we have a good nucleus of players, obviously a great coaching staff, and we've been working hard to do everything the right way. And, in football, it's tough to win. It's never easy to come out and win in this league, and unfortunately, things didn't go our way on Sunday, but we still have plenty of belief and rightfully so because of the players that we have on this team. And we're just going to go back to the grind and figure out a way to get things right.
This team has always seemed to do that the last 13, 14 years. Wish you all the best this week in Minnesota. Really appreciate the time. Thanks for stopping by.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Matthew Slater is with us. We will continue with more of our look ahead to the Minnesota Vikings in a short while. We'll be joined by Scott Zolak, my partner on the radio broadcast, Jackie Britton, who works, of course, at Patriots.com, with me on Kraft Sports Productions coverage of the Patriots. And as well, a little bit later, the voice of the Vikings, Paul Allen, will be with us. But our thanks to Matthew Slater, special teams captain and wide receiver for the Patriots. We'll continue with more right after this on Patriots.com.
We're NRG, and we're a new kind of energy company. One that's hard at work making the most of renewable sources of energy. One whose solar energy is helping power football stadiums across the country. One that's developing new technologies that can one day turn your home into its own source of power and put you in charge of how you use it. We're putting that power into your hands. NRG. The power to change life.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie. Three Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99. At a Microsoft store near you.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Welcome back to the Bob Soucy Show. Get the view from the booth as we go inside the broadcast booth with the Patriots Radio Network broadcast team.
Brady's in the gun. He's got the Who Man on the right wing. Colley and Tompkins left. Brady throws it to the end zone for Kenbrell. Tompkins leaping.
He got it! Touchdown! Patriots!
Kenbrell Tompkins!
Brady's back! That's your quarterback! Pull off the building! Unicorns! Show ponies! The beef.
Here's former Patriots quarterback Scott Zolak and the radio voice of the New England Patriots, Bob Soucy.
And hello again, everybody. Welcome back to the show from inside our Subway Fresh broadcast studios here at Gillette Stadium. I want to remind you to dial in on our Ace Ticket hotline at area code 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398 or 855-PATS-500. And you can email us at web radio at patriots.com. That's web radio at patriots.com. And we will bring in the aforementioned Scott Zolak, my partner on the radio broadcast, with whom I was rather dejected at the end of Sunday's game. But so it's a new week, and the Patriots put their focus on a new opponent, the Minnesota Vikings. And as we welcome you back on the show, as you've had your chance to digest what transpired last weekend, is it time for panic, or are you reassured by the success of the Patriots in the past and their track record in bouncing back under Bill Belichick?
You know, the excitement of the season, I think, you know, expectation-wise, you know, we're all excited to see this team get off to a great start. And I think we forgot how difficult it is to play in the city of Miami. And, you know, that stadium, regardless of the type of talent that they have, regardless of who the quarterback is, Patriots have not historically played well down there. We remember the game last year, and in all truth, I mean, Miami had a pretty good shot at sweeping the Patriots last year, which they did not. You look at it, it's never as bad, never as good as you think it was. And, you know, concerns coming out. I think offensive line's a big issue, but I think it's a correctable one. You could change schemes. You could pick five guys and say, hey, we're not going to rotate. Let's roll with these five guys. Defensively, a little more worrisome, I think, in the middle when you have a guy like Sean Marino that ran as hard and as successful as he did against this team. That's the biggest concern for me moving forward, Bob.
Well, especially when you're going up against a team that has a 10,000-yard rusher, six-time Pro Bowler in Adrian Peterson, and a guy as dynamic as Cordarrelle Patterson, who rushed over 100 yards on three carries for Minnesota last week. And then you've got a play caller like Norv Turner, who certainly does a lot with different formations and using his running game to complement his passing attack.
Yeah, I've known Norv for a long while. He's one of the better play callers in the game. Not the best head coach. I think Norv's gotten a bad rap, but been successful against this team. You know, he's put up some good yards when he's coached against Coach Belichick and his defensive coordinators. And, you know, he was with Troy Aikman and company back when they won Super Bowl. So North does know what he's doing. I think he's got that quintessential drop-back guy, Matt Castle. And, you know, whether it's, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson coming around on that jet sweep, you know, AP trying to give it to him. They run that counter. They use a fullback. They'll use two tights. So there's a lot of different looks. And then when you start worrying about all them, Then you got to worry about a guy like Kyle Rudolph that plays tight end. Then you got Greg Jennings, who was so successful as Green Bay's top target in the past. So Matt Castle and North Turner have a pretty good, you know, array of weapons that they could go to. It's just a matter of getting back and executing and playing sound defensive football.
Hey, and so I want to ask you a question that Bert Breer asked Bill Belichick today. Albert Breer, of course, of the NFL Network, a guy who appears regularly on your show on 98.5 The Sports Hub, along with Andy Gresh. He asked Bill if there's any institutional knowledge of Matt Castle that can help the Patriots in this weekend's game. As a former quarterback, do you believe there's anything that Bill and his staff has in their reservoir of information or insight that can help them against Matt Castle?
Yeah, I think there's trends. I think there's different little idiosyncrasies you feel about each player, or else you wouldn't have selected that player, or else cut that player, or traded that player. Definitely, I think, you know, you could read a little into it. Now, Matt's a much different player, I think, than when, you know, he was traded from here to go to Kansas City. And I think he's kind of come full circle where, you know, he's seen it all. I mean, he was released. He got to go to a Pro Bowl. He was coached by Bill out there. And now all of a sudden, you know, he kind of found himself out there in Minnesota, where he could kind of exist and not have to put a whole team on his back. And I think that's part of what transpired out in Kansas City, where now he could kind of hand the ball to AP. He's got a tight end that could run. And back to the original question, I really do think that, you know, you can, you know, have a little bit of an edge, you know, because you had that guy or you coached him up before. So he is a different player. But also on the flip side of that, Matt knows your trends, your tendencies, the way you like to call a game. You know, how do you roll the dice on, you know, third down? And the Patriots are much more different defensively than they were when Matt was the quarterback here.
And Zoe, with regards to the defense, you talked about concerns up front in particular, but what about the scheme? There's been a lot of talk and a lot written about the 34 scheme for this Patriots and whether or not the personnel is suited for it. What are your thoughts moving ahead for this team? 34 generally considered better against the run. What do you think the Patriots need to do to make those adjustments defensively? They are a bit undersized at certain spots by comparison with others, but nonetheless, Bill Belichick, of course, recognized widely as a guy with as great a defensive mind as any.
Yeah, I think you have to be careful when you flip schemes and you commit to one and you move to another. And remember, you go to one scheme to another, somebody's got to come off the field. So do you want to take Chandler Jones off because you don't think he's a down guy? Do you want to take Rob Ninkovich off? You know, there are times where I want Chandler Jones and Ninkovich on the field at the same time. But who's the guys in the middle? Is it going to be Hightower? Is it going to be Mayo? Or is Hightower better at the edge? See, now all of a sudden, you don't want to say, hey, you got too many guys to pick from. But if you flip to a 4-3, somebody's got to come off the field. I just don't know if they have enough interior defensive bodies to put four down guys in there. And that's the case I look at it.
Mm-hmm. The other thought I had, and I know players dismissed it as a possible excuse even going into the game, the weather in Miami and the conditions, and it certainly was not the only factor, maybe it wasn't even a major factor, but I think it could have been mitigated defensively had the offense sustained some drives in the second half. But the Patriots' offense usually was three and out, maybe one first down on a particular series, but thereafter it was short-lived. The defense was out there an awful lot in very hot and humid conditions, a lot of missed tackles as well. Is that mere coincidence or more?
Well, you and I talked about this, you know, after the game, you know, and you're coming back, you're trying to figure out why did this happen? Can you adjust this way? You know, you're not going to have that heat problem pretty much throughout the rest of the year. I think when you're jamming and you're up 20-10 and you're rolling, you know, maybe if you continue just to play that third quarter and then the fourth, maybe they win this game going away. I think you go in, you stop it for 12 minutes, you get inside the air conditioning, you come out, you're like, whew, it hits you in the face. If you're not used to that, I think it does take its toll. I mean, we went down Friday for the game, kind of tried to get adjusted to that. That didn't happen. And, you know, moving forward, there's nothing you can do. It's not an excuse. It's not something you blame, but it is part of, you know, playing in elements. That's why you want the game in January to be home if you're playing in the playoffs here. Because you got teams that come up here and play in sub-zero temperatures because you handle it and they can't. So it works both ways. They benefited from before, and now you got to find a way to combat that and play with it, play within those parameters during the regular season going to Miami. It's not an excuse.
Broadcast partner Scott Zolak on 98.5 The Sports Hub and the Patriots Radio Network. He's our guest today on the show here on Patriots.com Radio. And, of course, we invite you to email us at webradio@patriots.com and to dial in. We'll take your questions in a short while. I will on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398. But Zoe, switching to the Patriots offense, obviously we all want to see Tom Brady protected better. What are the other things you want to see from the Patriots offensively against a very, very good defense from Minnesota?
You know, I think two up things I think we took from that game, Julian Edelman and Shane Vereen. Thought they played well. I'd like to see them, you know, maybe incorporate Vereen a little more into the running game. You know, he was really good inside the red area, down and get to help them get that touchdown. And even Steven Ridley, but he ran the ball hard. I don't want to see him come away from that running game. I don't want to see Tom Brady chuck it 61 times, you know, but that game became one-dimensional. They talk about balance. They talk about wanting to keep teams, you know, on edge, you know, on their toes. And that's about incorporating their running game with the pass. We know they can throw it. And we know that if they protect Brady, you know, he's going to find that open guy. I think, you know, two things need to happen. Commit more to the run. Pick five guys up front. Let's go with those linemen. Let's get some continuity up front. Let's let those guys get used to playing next to each other throughout a course of 16 games.
I heard Dan Copen and Matt Light both talk about this today, the lack of continuity on the offensive line and how strange an experience that might be for an offensive lineman based on their careers. As a quarterback who's played, of course, in front of and behind a lot of different lines in his career, what are your thoughts? You ever experienced anything like what the Patriots have gone through, really the last part of preseason and then in week one this year with so many guys rotating on the offensive line?
No, but I mean, I've seen transformations. You know, the end, you mentioned the aforementioned Matt Light there at the end of his career. It was flipping shoulder from the right to the left side. And that whole transformation of where he really struggled in the preseason, we kind of held our breath. And then they kind of figured it out. The biggest thing they've always done is, it was Dante Scarnecchia as a line coach. He figured it out. Regardless of the five guys that went into that game was going to play. He knew how to plug those guys, you know, whatever benefited them, how to put them in those certain roles. We just hope that Dave DiGuglielmo can do that, that he could make those adjustments that Scar was able to make in between, you know, series.
You know, and another thought strikes me, too, about making adjustments moving forward to the offensive line. It's not only Dave, I think, but Brian Daboll spent a lot of time around Dante Scarnecchia last year. Brian, of course, has been an offensive coordinator in the NFL, and though his position coach responsibilities for the Patriots have him working with the tight ends. Nonetheless, he was around Dante a great deal last year. Bill Belichick, of course, is a guy that probably knows just about anything that everybody else knows about any position on the field, I think. And then there's Josh McDaniels, who, of course, is the offensive coordinator. So a lot of people this week are placing the spotlight intensely on the new offensive line coach, Dave DiGuglielmo. But it, in my mind, it really has to be a collaborative effort, doesn't it?
It always is. It's always back to that original message. You win as a team, you lose as a team. And, you know, systematically across the board, they failed on defense. They failed on offense. And it's a part of the game we always forget to talk about, special teams.
Yeah, they failed on special teams.
You get a puck block to start the game and pin that defense back. And next thing you know, you're trailing 7-0 early in the game, and you're fighting an uphill battle throughout. Now, they did take control. They righted the ship. It's just disappointing that they weren't able to come out and respond in the second half, but we've always seen them be able to make those adjustments, be mentally tough, and they weren't.
Well, even in the second half, they started that with a penalty on special teams that cost them 8 yards of field position. The offsides on the kickoff, and instead of Miami starting at the 20, the Dolphins started at the 28.
Right, correct. And it's just the little things. And, you know, won a game, you know, maybe you overcome it. You know, all of a sudden you start getting 2, 3, 4 of those type of things that happen, it becomes too insurmountable, and then you're fighting uphill for the rest of the game.
Hey, Zoe, finally, I know a lot of people believe this based on the track record, and Greg Bedard, who used to cover the team on a regular basis for the Boston Globe and now writes so well about the NFL for the MMQB on our flagship station, your station and mine, 98.5, the Sports Hub, yesterday, said that, you know, he always believes that Bill goes into a season, speaking of Belichick, with a long-range plan in mind, and that, you know, week one was really just a small part of that long-range plan. Is that your experience in your perspective, too, that, yeah, there was a lot of mixing and matching on both sides of the ball last Sunday, but we're really not going to really know what this team has for some time to come?
Well, obviously, he didn't like the outcome of the game, but he will adjust as the season goes on. And he's always told me that around week 5, week 6, I start to know what kind of football team I have. Right now, I don't think he has a clue. Not that he doesn't have a clue as a coach, but you tell me if he knows what the identity is going to be on offense, what he'll be able to put in his back pocket and dial up on defense, what scheme, what blitz. Those things start to develop. They start to take shape and run its course throughout the course of the season. It's a matter of going back, making adjustments. And he said one thing in his interviews this past week that, you know, mechanically, from a functionality standpoint, we weren't technically sound. There are little techniques, and that's what's failed them. That tells me that things are correctable. It's not a depth thing. It's not a personnel thing. So if you get three of these clunkers in a row, then we got major issues here in this football team. I just don't think that's the case.
And how about leadership in the locker room? A lot of people are wondering if there's a lack of it after Logan Mankins was traded away. He certainly embodied toughness and leadership and commanded respect on that team. Who's the guy you point to now from a bit of the outside, but you know this team well enough and have your finger on the pulse of this organization.
Yeah.
Who's the guy or two that you point to and say, okay, this guy or those guys this week really have to assert themselves as leaders?
I think Brady, and I think Revis. And, you know, I just think Mayo and Wilfork are givens. Brady's a given on the offense, but he's always been the guy that's righted that ship, you know, offensively. Revis is a guy that's an elite player. I think now he takes his team and says, you know what, guys? If I got to match up, I'll match up week to week. It's on me. It's on my back. The other 10 of you guys, you figure it out. I'll shut my guy down. And I take that with full meaning, saying, you know, Ty Law used to do that. We're playing Buffalo to Derek Moles. Bleep you, Moles. I got him. Everybody else figure it out. I think Revis has that ability to do it.
Well, the leader of our broadcast crew, Scott Zolak, with us. So appreciate it as always.
I think it was Mark Capella, really, that leads our broadcast crew. He's the guy that's got reservations. I look forward to getting that, those pizza gift certificates for coming on your show, the Ron Sosie Show.
I'll talk to the bosses upstairs. Hey, Zo, thanks a lot, buddy.
See you, pal.
Scott Zolak with us. By the way, Mark Capello is the radio producer on the Patriots broadcasts. Again, aired on the Patriots radio network on flagship station, the Sports Hub, 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston. And our beloved employer over at CBS Radio, Scott Zolak, and mine. And we do appreciate the time from my broadcast partner, Scott Zolak, here on the Bob Sosi Show on Patriots.com. Want to invite you to email us at webradio@patriots.com. And, of course, to call in, dial 855-PATS-500, 855-PATS-500, and also on the Ace Ticket Hotline. You can reach us at 508-298-0398. That's 298-0398. Well, we were on the air, of course, immediately joined by Matthew Slater today and transition to Scott Zolak. And now we'll take a moment to, again, take about a half step back and collect ourselves and explain the purpose of this program in its infancy still here in week two of the regular campaign, and as well look ahead to the Minnesota Vikings. And coming up in the second hour, we will be joined by Jackie Britton of Patriots.com, Patriots Today, Patriots Press Pass, all things Patriots on the Internet on Patriots.com, and a bit later on as well, the longtime voice of the Minnesota Vikings, Paul Allen, who's a talk show host in the Twin Cities and as the very exciting and excitable at times play-by-play voice of the Minnesota Vikings, really is a guy that commands respect, knows the game extremely well, and describes it even better on the air for the Minnesota Vikings. And you can often hear him, in fact, on those highlight clips as Scott Zolak and his midday partner Andy Gresh go around the NFL inside the huddle on their program. Paul Allen will join us a bit later on as well to talk about the Vikings, who've really changed their culture this year by changing their head coach Mike Zimmer, and also by changing personnel pretty significantly on the defensive side, while offensively taking advantage of two of the big weapons in the NFL and running back Adrian Peterson, and of course the dynamic Cordarrelle Patterson, now in his second year as a Minnesota wide receiver and kick returner. But let's talk about the Patriots first against the Miami Dolphins. And as we know, it was a very disappointing way to start the campaign, although the Pats led at halftime 20-10, outscored in the second half by the 23-0 margin by the Miami Dolphins. It started, as noted, with Scott Zolak for the Pats with a misstep on the opening kickoff of the second half. Brandon LaFell was caught offsides, and rather than a touchback, the Dolphins began at the 28-yard line. And really, that began a snowball of plays that kind of indicated and embodied what took place throughout the third quarter. You had Charles Clay, for example, gaining 24 yards on a reception to begin that drive. Talk about a drive starter. But more aggravating, I think, in watching it and certainly experiencing it, I think, for Patriot fans and no doubt players and coaches alike, is that Clay gained so many of those yards, by my count, 10 yards after a missed tackle. And that was really a big story in the second half. Missed tackles for Patriots defense that was on the field a great deal in the third quarter in particular. And no Sean Moreno running so hard with 134 yards. The Miami Dolphins as a team in a new offense under coordinator Bill Lazor, formerly with the Philadelphia Eagles, rushing for an average of 5 yards per carry. And also Ryan Tannehill as a quarterback, though in a sense, inaccurate. The numbers for Tannehill, not overly impressive, but even in the process of completing 18 of 32 passes, so many of those balls that were caught seemed to be a bit off target. But we did see guys like Mike Wallace, who has a reputation for not being a receiver who generally would fight for balls, go up and do exactly that. He made a couple of very fine plays where he had to adjust, including one on a touchdown that was deflected away by Darrell Revis. And again, it was a position for Revis where he was in the right place, it seemed, at the right time, knocked the ball down, but on the carom, Wallace, in close quarters, somehow caught it, and the Dolphins scored a touchdown. You look at a play like that, and certainly that's a big momentum as well as a scoring play, but what really, when you break down the early part of that third quarter, that I think speaks more to the outcome, are those places we've noted. Missed tackles leading to 10 extra yards on a 24-yard reception. The 8 yards that might have been hidden because instead of a touchback, the Dolphins begin their first series of the third quarter from the 28. A bit later on in that series, abetted by a personal foul call. One of three roughing the passer calls against the Patriots. Two of them on Chandler Jones, one on Dante Hightower. And however questionable the Hightower call might have been in particular, nonetheless, that's 45 yards of penalties right there, including 15 as noted on that early drive for the Dolphins in the third quarter. So instead of an incomplete pass to set up a third down and 7, Miami gains 15 plus a first down. And now as you total the yardage for that first scoring series, the Dolphins cutting the margin, getting momentum, drawing from 20 to 10 to within 20 to 13. They settled for a field goal on a drive that consumed more than 4 minutes and accumulated more than 60 yards. Well, by my count, 46 of those yards were really extra yards, or free yards, if you will. They were accounted for by penalties or extra yardage after missed tackles. So you look back at that particular series, and though it netted only 3 points, unfortunately for the Patriots in the second half and for the Miami Dolphins, it was really a series of signs of times to come in the second half, and Miami, in fact, would take the lead after a very short set for the Patriots with Tom Brady being strip-sacked and Miami recovering his fumble at the 34-yard line of the Pats and going in to tie the game just a short time later on that aforementioned touchdown pass from Tannehill to Wallace. A lot of people, of course, with good reason, concerned about the state of the Patriots' offensive line, the performance, unable to protect Tom Brady throughout the second half. No doubt there was an impact in the present on pass plays, and one has to believe a residual effect as well moving forward in that game, and it was something Tom was asked about today in his press conference, speeding up the process when you're under pressure as a quarterback. And there were definitely times on Sunday when he had no chance whatsoever to get off passes, much less complete them. And then there were a few other times as that game went on where maybe there was the time or maybe there was an open receiver and the Pats were simply by then taken out of sync. To the Dolphins' credit, they lost all three linebackers in that game. One of them, actually, a starting linebacker, was out before the contest, Philip Wheeler, but in the course of action, very early in particular, they lost Danelle Ellerby and Koamisi to injury, and yet Miami was still able to mount quite a defensive, and in that second half, a defensive stand against the Patriots in that second half, and take control of the game. So credit to Miami, of course, for its effort to know Sean Moreno with his hard running and the broken tackles, to the Dolphins' defense with the effort to especially from that defensive front, but nonetheless, again, cause for concern for the Patriots, in particular in the trenches, on the offensive line and on the defensive line. So for the first time, as a result, the Patriots are now in week two, coming off a loss for the first time, in fact, since 2003. That was the year the Buffalo Bills were out of the Patriots. The season ended, however, with the Pats turning the score around on Buffalo, beaten in week one, 31-0. They closed out the campaign with a 31-0 win over the Bills and went on, of course, to a Super Bowl championship. And many believe that there is still the talent in place in this particular case with these Patriots, and no doubt with head coach Bill Belichick and his long track record for the Patriots, this is no time to panic, as Matthew Slater told us to start the program with the Pats casting their glance ahead at the Minnesota Vikings. But as for the Vikings now, you've got a situation where this team is really trying to build on the momentum it has generated from the preseason and week one. Mike Zimmer was hired as the head coach, a guy widely respected as a defensive coordinator, 14 years as an NFL defensive coordinator alone after a long road through the college ranks, someone who was with Bill Parcells in Dallas, more recently with Marvin Lewis in Cincinnati, Keep in mind, it was the Mike Zimmer-coordinated defense for the Bengals last year, albeit a talented one, that kept the Patriots out of the end zone. It was the Cincinnati Bengals who a year ago held the Patriots in a close win to two field goals and stopped Tom Brady's streak of 52 games in a row with at least one touchdown pass. So Mike Zimmer, with all his defensive knowledge and hard-nosed mentality, and also a guy who's been a grinder in the NFL, and I think his team now with Minnesota has taken on that personality trait of Zimmer, and as well his approach as a head coach, reflective of his approach and his track record as a coordinator. It's a hard-nosed team, it seems, a very physical football team that got to the St. Louis Rams two quarterbacks last Sunday, some five times for sacks, applied a lot of pressure on the Rams quarterbacks, Sean Hill, later Austin Davis, held the Rams out of the end zone. The Vikings, the only team in the NFL on opening weekend that did not allow a touchdown. And I know you might be thinking, well, the Rams' offense really isn't very good, especially without the regular quarterback who's lost for the season, Sam Bradford. But nonetheless, it's still impressive the performance that the Vikings were able to produce in their season opener. Now, they were unbeaten in the preseason, and though, of course, you get into regular season play and there is a complete change in terms of what a team does schematically, the very little game planning in the preseason, different story in the regular campaign. But nonetheless, what the Vikings achieved, it seems, in that preseason was confirmation of all those messages that Mike Zimmer was sending out to his team about being tough, about eliminating mistakes, about what it takes to be a winning team. And what we saw in week one was the Vikings go out and produce the kind of performance that only adds credibility to those statements and only builds the confidence of those players to continue to believe in it. The Vikings at 1-0 with an opportunity for a rare 2-0 start in their franchise history. It's been a long time since this is a team that won a game as lopsided as it did against the St. Louis Rams, and for the Vikings as well since 2009. This is an opportunity for the first time since 2009 to put together back-to-back victories to start the campaign. So Minnesota's got a lot in its favor going into this game: momentum, confidence, you know, belief in the cultural change that Mike Zimmer and his staff, along with offensive coordinator Norv Turner's knowledge and intuition as a play caller, you know, provide to them. They're playing at home for the first time this season. Now, they will be outdoors, no longer at the Metrodome/Mall of America field. They're building a new stadium, and of course, Minnesota will be the host of the Super Bowl in Super Bowl 52 in several years. But for now, they're playing at the University of Minnesota's TCF Bank Stadium, so they will be outdoors. That'll be a change for them. And for this Minnesota Vikings team, nonetheless, one expects, if not the noise of a dome stadium, nonetheless, a pretty raucous atmosphere, given the excitement the Vikings have now generated with their 1-0 start by routing the Rams coming off that 4-0 preseason, and as well with the likes of the guys we've talked about a little bit, Adrian Peterson, Cordarrelle Patterson. There's a quarterback in Matt Castle who seems to be a placeholder right now for the rookie Teddy Bridgewater, but nonetheless has been a winner in the NFL, both with the Patriots in 2008 and more recently in 2010 as a guy who went to the Pro Bowl for the Kansas City Chiefs. So he is capable. He's in a good system for a quarterback engineered by Norv Turner. I mentioned the two skill players already in Peterson and Patterson. Don't forget about the tight end Kyle Rudolph. Keep in mind the kind of game that Jordan Cameron had as a tight end, a very good one at that, for the Cleveland Browns last year Gillette, when Cleveland nearly knocked off the Patriots with Norv Turner calling plays with a quarterback like Jason Campbell. So the Pats certainly have their work cut out for them, but as we know, with Bill Belichick and his staff and with guys like Matthew Slater, who joined us early in the program, they will get to work and prepare for the Minnesota Vikings as week two approaches, of course, with the Pats in the Twin Cities to open the second week of the campaign against the Vikings, with the 1 o'clock kickoff coming up on our Patriots radio network. And of course, you'll hear comprehensive coverage with Mark Bertrand and company, the crew from PFW, before and after that game here on Patriots Radio on Patriots.com. We're going to take a break. At the top of the hour, we'll be joined by my partner on Patriots.com covering the Pats in the locker room today, and certainly just back from the editing bay, putting together a lot of features for Patriots Today and Patriots Press Pass, the one and only Jackie Britton. But first, we're going to take a time out here on the Bob Soucy Show. We'll continue right after this, inviting you to join us at 855-PATS-500 or 508-298-0398 or via email at webradio@patriots.com.
We're NRG, and we're a new kind of energy company, one that's hard at work making the most of renewable sources of energy. One whose solar energy is helping power football stadiums across the country. One that's developing new technologies that can one day turn your home into its own source of power and put you in charge of how you use it. We're putting that power into your hands. NRG, the power to change life.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go. Go. That's it. Come on. Kick it in hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call ** NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99. At a Microsoft store near you.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
I say 1-800-MY-SEATS. It's time now for a call to the bullpen.
I just, like, can't read.
The Kraft Sports Productions bullpen.
I'm drunk on a plane.
Time now to welcome in Patriots team reporter Jackie Britton to the Bob Soucy Show.
And hello again, everybody. Welcome back. We got our email address to contact us, webradio@patriots.com. Dial in at 855-PATS-500 or on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398. And when you speak of her, speak kindly.
Man,
of Jackie
that
Britton,
intro is never
as Crash Davis
old.
Once said.
That intro himself. Will not get old. That's funny.
Kevin Collins, our esteemed producer, again, always quick at the switch when
right.
it comes to giving somebody a hard time. Unjustified, I would say.
She yeah. takes it in stride.
Yeah. yeah. I don't really care about him.
Jackie Britton, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Bob. I'm glad I was asked to come back. That's always a good sign.
You know, and as someone who's had trouble both reading and, as our audience knows, speaking, I completely empathize with you.
Right.
And the last thing you want as a broadcaster is for someone to have saved an outtake, because you know
yeah.
we'll come back.
Right. Word fumbles. Well,
yeah.
Word fumbles happen in regular everyday life, people.
But one thing that person should know, and Kevin, you're advised now, we don't forget.
Yeah.
And you know what they say about payback, right, Jackie?
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to say the word because I don't say bad words, but I know what they say about it.
She doesn't say bad words literally, folks. She just says dadgummit.
Yeah, dadgummit.
I don't cuss y'all.
Try not to. Sports are different, though. You know, sports can't help it.
Well, I'm sure you were tempted to say a few bad words in the second half in particular last Sunday when the Patriots lost in the season opener to the
yeah,
Dolphins.
Yeah, that was bad. I mean, obviously, the offensive line was the most glaring problem in that game. I don't think I've seen Tom Brady on the ground that many times. And so that was frustrating to watch for sure the second half. What was even more frustrating was going into the locker room to try and interview guys about it. No one really wanted to talk about the game. That was kind of the vibe today, is that, hey, we're done talking about Miami. And I think everyone's glad about that.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, the players are taught as professionals. You move on. There's the old cliche that the most important play in a football game is the next play. And I guess
right.
the most important game in a football season, of course, is the next season.
Yeah, and you know
the next game.
You know, it's funny that, like, I think someone touched on this, like, last week. But both Matthew Slater, Nate Solder, a handful of guys talked about how they've been going back to fundamentals in preparation for whether it was Miami, but definitely for the Vikings. And that's just got to be so frustrating, don't you think? Like, isn't that what, like, training camp in the off season is for, is to get down the fundamentals, and then you can kind of game plan and stuff when the regular season starts, and then have to go back and, like, focus on those fundamentals again? Like, isn't that just really frustrating as a team? I would imagine.
You know, I think there's probably is some frustration, although I think that, you know, it's reflective in some respects. Now, I say this fully understanding that a lot of teams around the league don't feel that way today. But Bill Belichick has often talked about the difference between training camps years ago and training camps today, where there's less time in pads, less time on the field. Years
right.
ago, you'd have 50 practices or so before you even played a preseason game with
right.
double sessions and the way things were. Now it's a different case, but again, it's the same case for everyone. And
right.
there are a lot of teams coming off a week one performance that they're feeling very good about, and they are concentrating on scheme.
Right.
You know, this team has been in a bit of transition, as we know, the offensive line in really an unsettled state, especially with the trade of Logan Mankins. So
right.
that helps to explain that somewhat.
Right. I wonder how much that shuffling around the offensive line creates, you know, inconsistency and confusion among those guys. I mean, I can't imagine that that is necessarily a good thing all the time. And I wonder how long we'll see a lot of the shuffling around. Like, what will happen when Brian Stork is ready to come back was one of the questions that I have. You know, but I think that just can create, I mean, look, I'm obviously not a football coach, but I would just imagine that just creates a lot of inconsistency and confusion for a team that's, you know, you're used to having an anchor like Logan Mankins for so many years. But I don't know.
Well,
certainly,
you know,
a lot of work to be done there.
You look at the Minnesota Vikings offensive line, and those guys as a unit played every snap of last week's game. It's an experienced group. They've been together for some time, and as noted, they played every snap of the St. Louis Rams game in comparison to the Patriots offensive line, of course, which experienced a lot of rotation, guys in and out from series to series.
Yeah.
And I heard Matt Light today, Dan Copen, speaking on local radio on our flagship station on the Patriots Radio Network, 98.5 The Sports Hub, about the continuity and how you really like that as an offensive lineman. But to some degree, there has always been some versatility in a Patriots offensive line. You look back at last year, for example, there was the Miami game when Logan Mankins had to kick out to left tackle because Nate Solder got hurt, and Josh Klein had to go in and finish that game at left guard. So this is not unprecedented for this team.
No.
It's just unusual, I think, to experience the kind of problems they have for week one.
Yeah, and I wonder how much to... I don't think this really has anything to do with it, but Dave DiGuglielmo, just how his presence maybe has shaken things up a little bit. It didn't seem like in the offseason talking to any of these guys that anything new, dramatically new was going to be implemented. It kind of seems like there was a lot of the foundation was still there. So I wonder if him being the new offensive line coach had any sway in that. But I don't know. Definitely, my eyes all on the offensive line. On Sunday. And, Rob Gronkowski and Tom Brady's chemistry wasn't there. And I kind of felt like Brady was forcing it at times, to go to Gronk. I mean, he's in, triple teamed, And so I wonder, I don't really know what the disconnect there. But in the second half, obviously just a disconnect across the board, but especially between Brady and Gronk.
Our guest is Jackie Britton of Patriots Today and Patriots Press Pass and other Patriot ventures on Patriots.com.
Yeah.
It's pretty much everything on .com.
Yeah. But you do it with me. I'm not alone.
I am your partner in crime.
That's right.
So to speak.
Yeah.
Although you do a lot more than I do. I will say that. You are definitely the leader in the clubhouse when it comes to the volume of work and also the hours that one invests
on that side. Well, thank you, Bob. Wow. I'll just sit here all day.
I've got to make up for that intro.
That's all right. Yeah. Don't worry. I'll get Kevin later.
As much as we dwell on the offensive line, really, as we all know, too, none of the Patriots' aspects of play on Sunday were exemplary by any stretch. The offense did produce 20 points in the first half, but they also failed really to fully capitalize on the three turnovers, for example. They got only 10 points out of three giveaways. In the second half, the offense did very little to sustain any momentum or any drives to help give the defense a bit of a breather.
Right.
Defensively, a lot of missed tackles. The defensive line really struggled in the second half. I thought they got manhandled up front.
I thought Edelman obviously was probably, if there's a bright spot in that game, I think it's Shane Vereen and Julian Edelman. Brady going to Vereen in the red zone three consecutive times before he gets that touchdown, shows a lot of, there's been obviously some trust building up there, which is only natural, but I thought Shane Vereen did great. Julian Edelman was awesome, so certainly some good things, but it just seemed like the momentum, and it's exactly what happened last year. There was this great, build of momentum, and they go into the half, and then it's just a completely different team walks back out on the field. Some good things, and going back to the vibe in the locker room, everybody is glad to kind of wash their hands clean of week one and focus on another road game this week against the Vikings. So,
and on that very subject, they've got a lot to focus on. Their attention will be split offensively for the Vikings between
Adrian Peterson, can't be high on the priority
list. Kyle Rudolph.
I can't imagine. probably not high on the priority list is Adrian. Yeah.
You're going to do a feature on Patriots.com.
Yes.
A matchup feature. Yeah. Adrian Peterson and Jerod Mayo, who had 17 tackles against Adrian Peterson and the Vikings in 2010.
Right. You look that one up. So familiar with him, obviously, I guess, to an extent. Not, someone he hasn't seen before. So I guess that works well. But what do we have? What do the Patriots have? Four linebackers? Is that the depth chart right now for the Patriots?
Well, there's five of if you don't include Rob Ninkovich and Chandler Jones, again, those are two guys who in the preseason did a lot of linebacker play.
Right. So I'm interested to see how they cover this guy, because you can't give him much open space to run wild, because he'll do some damage. He's going to wreak havoc on this defense. I mean, if anything, hopefully the run defense improves after no Sean Moreno, go Dogs. Adrian Peterson, kind of a whole different animal, whole other story.
So a bulldog from Georgia.
Sorry, I got to slip that in there.
A different animal than Adrian Peterson's. his school didn't have an animal as a mascot, the Sooners of Oklahoma.
Yeah.
But Jackie Britton, as you might surmise, is a Georgia girl. But when you talk about the Vikings offensively, and it's not only Adrian Peterson, as we know, and Cordarrelle Patterson, but Rudolph is a very good tight end.
Yeah.
And it's a team with a very experienced offensive line, a good offensive line, it seems, by all accounts, and based on what we saw last week against a very good defensive line from St. Louis. I mean, the Rams have one of the more imposing pass rushes in the NFC. Robert Quinn, as good as it gets, it seems, on the defensive line, and the Vikings did a very good job of not only blocking in the run game, but protecting Matt Castle and
right.
he dropped back to throw.
Yeah, it'll be a good one. I'm excited about going to Minnesota and seeing all of these things like play out in real time. I've never seen like Adrian Peterson play in real life, and you know Cordarrelle Patterson, all that. So I think it's gonna be there'll be some interesting matchups for sure. I'm really interested to see Revis, kind of how he plays. What was your before I say anything? What was your opinion of how Revis did against Mike Wallace?
Well, I think overall, when you look at the game and plays that were zone coverage plays and plays that were man-to-man coverage, I think Revis did okay. Now, he was beaten a couple of times, but, you know, I think there were also a couple of instances where it appeared as though he was beaten, where it was his own defense and he had to come across the field and make a play on Wallace. Yeah, I don't think it was Darrell Revis at his very, very best.
Yeah.
But I also will give some... I'm going to give a little bit of credit to Wallace because I knocked him going into the game. I really didn't have a lot of respect for him as a guy who did anything other than use his speed on go patterns, fly patterns on the outside. He showed a willingness on Sunday, it seemed to me, to fight for balls
yeah.
that we hadn't seen in the past. Certainly didn't see it last year for right. the Dolphins against the Patriots, in particular in the first meeting of the teams.
Yeah, okay. I pretty much feel the same. I thought that Revis maybe it let up a little bit on there were certain times where I felt like he kind of let up a little bit, but maybe he just was surprised. I don't know.
Well, I think one of the things that you know made Sunday's game so hard to comprehend after the fact, and maybe it goes along with the impression that Revis left about his performance with a lot of people on the outside, the expectations are so high.
Yeah.
And I think we all kind of expected
Darrelle
Revis
point.
Not to allow a single catch this
right.
year.
Right, that's
and,
a good point.
And that's not the life of an NFL quarterback.
That's a very good point. Yeah, Bob, you bring up a very good point. You put me in
once
my
in
place.
A while,
yeah.
Jackie. Once in a while.
Put me in my place quite a bit. I need that. That's good. You're right. There has been, ever since he's pretty much, you know, signed with the Patriots, it's been, the hype and the intensity has been pretty high up there, so it's like he can only do wrong.
And the other part of that, though, too, is as we know, and as they know all too well and better than us, as a Patriot, it comes with the territory because of the success this team has had since 2001.
Right.
It's Super Bowl or bust, it seems, in New right. England every year.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, Jackie, final couple of thoughts with regards to this team. Tom Brady today had his press conference, per usual, on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
Interesting
clean
look.
Shaven.
Shaved the beard, but he came with gloves.
I know. Wasn't that weird?
A little odd.
That was kind of weird.
It did bear the logo, I noticed, of a brand that he and his wife now are both
oh,
endorsing.
Under Armour, right. That was a little bit strange. And he was wearing, like, a zip-up jacket, like, but he said they'd just come from, like, a walkthrough. So, I mean, I guess they could have been doing a walkthrough, but... I don't know. It was kind of weird. I don't really know what to assume about that. I'm not going to assume anything.
Cause... Anything that he had to say, though, that struck you as not weird, but nonetheless insightful about this game on Sunday?
He didn't strike me. He didn't say anything that was weird or out of the ordinary. I mean, he was classic, you know, classic Tom Brady, in my opinion. I can't remember anything he said that, like, stuck out as out of the ordinary. But he did, you know, talk about his relationship with Matt Castle, which, you know, he spoke obviously very highly of him just as a friend of his for so many years since playing with him. And just says, but look, I want to beat him on Sunday. That's just the way that it goes. So, but that's not surprising to me at all. He's always has great things to say about their opponent. Obviously another, I think he credited their defense, another really imposing defense that he's gonna have to go up against. So, you know, hopefully they can, make things happen on offense this time.
All right.
But that's all I've got for you.
And, that's what the hope is. What's your expectation on Sunday?
Oh, wow.
You don't have to give me a prediction or a score.
Yeah, I won't give you a prediction.
I want you to convey, you know, what you think this team's going to do from an effort standpoint.
I think that they play, I think that they're going to, I think they will play a lot better under the fire that they're under. You know, they've really got, if they didn't have a chip on their shoulder before, they've definitely got one now. And I think that they always seem to perform better under pressure. We saw that several times last season. And I think that, you know, losing the first game of the regular season for the first time in 10 years will kind of shake them up a little bit. And Brady is, you know, no one performs Brady, I think, than when he's mad and under pressure. So I think that the Patriots will come away with the win. I think it will be close, though. And going on the road is not going to be easy.
It's going to be, I think, an extremely difficult challenge. But right. I agree. I think this is a team that has performed under pressure very well through the years.
It's going to be close, I think. But who knows?
We'll I concur.
Yeah.
Jackie, appreciate the
time,
as always.
Good to know you're on my side. Thanks for having me. I hope you have me back.
You're welcome back. So long as Kevin has that intro
Kevin,
at the ready, he'll welcome you back. Jackie Britton, our guest on Patriots Today, of course, with me covering the Patriots every day at Patriots.com, our guest tonight on the Bob Soucy Show. And again, we invite you to join us via email at webradio@patriots.com or on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398. Pete wrote in from Augusta, Maine. Welcome, Bob. Could you please speak a little on scheme? For instance, the bend but don't break. And in Pete's mind, should it be an attacking defense? And then on offense, the hurry up and the no huddle, are these not run enough? And in addition, Pete adds a couple of questions with regards to the balance or imbalance between run and pass for the offense, and as well the difference between 43 and 34 defensive schemes and whether the Patriots should have a mix of both or play more 4-3. And Pete, I will preface my reply with what I'm sure any listener already knows. I am far from a football savant when it comes to knowledge of schematics and techniques. The coaches at the college level, much less the NFL level, forgotten far more than I'm going to know in the next. They forgot more in the last 30 seconds than I know. But I will say this. Yeah, I think from years of following the game and talking to those who know it best and investing the time and preparing, I think that you look at pressure versus passiveness, and sometimes you think that you've got to do a blitz and send extra people on a regular basis to get to a quarterback. And there is a lot to that. Certainly Rex Ryan, his brother Rob Ryan, those are guys who have done great jobs as defensive coordinators in the past, or in Rex Ryan's case, as a head coach of, at times, calling a zero blitz. I mean, just sending the whole house defensively and getting after quarterbacks, but there's a price you pay when you do that. I think that in Bill Belichick's case, as easy enough as that was for me to say, during his career, there hasn't necessarily, it seems, again, having followed it from afar and now watching it more up close, that kind of mentality. I know a lot of people lament the bend but don't break style here, but some of the defenses that I've been exposed to in the past, up close at the college level and as well following them as professional teams, I think tend to employ more of that style. And I think that there is a happy medium, and I think you will see at times the Patriots bring extra bodies and apply pressure. It doesn't always come in an all-out blitz. Sometimes it's a zone blitz that you don't even notice. At other times, maybe it's a slot cornerback. And for example, you go back to the Vikings, or rather to the Dolphins win last year for the Pats at Gillette. A game-turning play was a slot corner blitz from Logan Ryan that produced a strip sack. And I think we'll see that. A lot of it is just based on what you're going up against offensively. But Bill Belichick's philosophy defensively, it seems, has never been one to sell out and really dial up a lot of blitzes to try to get after a quarterback. And I think that there is a lot of merit to that. This is a team that produced three turnovers in that first half. And the big thing defensively, I think, is you got to get off the field on third down and you got to have takeaways. 2 years ago, the Patriots had 41 takeaways, second in the NFL. Now, last year, the number was down to 29. Still not bad, but nonetheless, there's a drop off. Well, they start the season with three turnovers forced in the first week of the year. Now, those were turnovers forced against Miami. You can say, well, the Dolphins had some big gains before the Patriots got the ball loose, but there was pressure on Tannehill when he made an ill-advised and a poor throw that was intercepted by Alfonso Dennard, and then there were two big sticks on the ball that jarred the ball loose to produce those fumbles. So I do believe that when it comes to pressure as a defense or laying back and not being aggressive enough in the minds of many, you can walk that line. The Seattle Seahawks, a lot of people believe, just turn it loose as a defense to get after the passer. But last year in the Super Bowl, according to their defensive coordinator, Dan Quinn, in an interview that I heard last year following the rout of the Broncos, said they blitzed fewer than 10 times. Now, when it comes to the 43 versus the 34, it's been my expectation since the preseason when the Pats shifted more to a 3-4 alignment that we're going to see a mix of that this year. And I think based on what they expected of Miami going into the game, on Sunday. They probably expected a lot of motion that the Dolphins showed during preseason. I think that, 34 defense conceivably and theoretically is designed to be better against the run. And, you know, as it turned out, the Dolphins, of course, rushed with great success in the second half. I'm not necessarily sure, though, that that was all the result of scheming. I think there were a couple of instances, where definitely, they had big plays that sprung their backs free, almost untouched through the line. But there were also a lot of plays where they gained significant yardage after contact. And you could say, well, the personnel wasn't suited for the 34, I suppose. Certainly Joe Volano is undersized when it comes to a defensive lineman. Chandler Jones, a lot of people believe, doesn't have the body to play at defensive end in a 34, but is more suited to a linebacker role like we saw in the preseason. But I think what we're going to see from this team moving forward, frankly, and I would anticipate, because it is a game plan specific team, is a mix of both. Now, with regards to the offense, second half, Patriots really didn't have possession enough to run the hurry up and no huddle. I think they were just trying to get something established. And beyond that, I think given the conditions in Miami, that had a lot to do with it, because the Dolphins came into the season wanting to be a fast tempo team like the Philadelphia Eagles. And we really didn't see much of that from Miami until about midway through the third quarter. I would agree with Pete's point, however, about the imbalance between run and pass early in the second half in particular. And that said, Josh McDaniels, the Patriots offensive coordinator, even expressed a concern moving forward about getting into what I think he termed an element that they did last Sunday, in which they passed the ball nearly 60 times overall. And there was a stretch early in the second half where really they did not run the ball very often. I think only a couple of carries for Stephen Ridley in the first three or four series of the second half. And, a lot of that, again, had to do with the fact that those were short live possessions. They were three and outs, or they were maybe a one first down possession. But nonetheless, it's something I think one would look for the Patriots to establish more of, because that first long touchdown drive that they had to get even at 7-7 incorporated a bit of the both. And Shane Vereen was instrumental in that scoring march as both a runner and a receiver. Got an email from Joe in listening in Minnesota, I believe, or at least listening on his TuneIn radio app. Wants to know about a game breaker for the Vikings, Cordarrelle Patterson, who he says is the second coming of Randy Moss. Also wants to know about Patriots rookie running back James White, who was inactive on Sunday. James White was a healthy scratch before Sunday's game for the Pats. Based on what we saw from him early in training camp, there is reason to believe that he's a guy who's going to fit nicely in the Patriots offense. Maybe not as productive during the preseason as a lot of people had hoped in terms of rushing yards or receiving yardage, but I think there's a lot to like about James White, both as a pass catcher and a runner, and beyond that, as a guy who does well in pass protection. He had a big block, in fact, for a long completion by Jimmy Garoppolo during one of the preseason games in blitz pickup, and that's an area that can't be overlooked. When we talk about the Patriots, or any offense for that matter, how running backs and tight ends or H-backs and fullbacks support the offensive line when it comes to pass blocking. For example, one of the big sacks Miami got, again, to help turn momentum and gain possession for a strip sack by Cameron Wake in last Sunday's game, involved the defensive end going right by the tight end, Michael Ho'omanowanui in that case, but also the running back, Stephen Ridley, jumped up inside and then tried to get back to at least get a chip or impede the progress of the pass rusher and couldn't get to him, and Tom Brady got hammered on that play. So it's imperative for running backs in any offense, if they're going to stay on the field, especially on third down, they've got to be able to pass block. And James White is a young man who, as an NFL rookie, brings that skill set to this team. And I think we're going to see a lot more of him down the road, as opposed to what we'll see of him early in this season. But I wouldn't expect him to be inactive all year long. I think he's a guy who will have a role, and a very active one, no pun intended, as this season wanes on. With regards to Cordarrelle Patterson, he is very dangerous. And as we talked about with Matthew Slater, he is so as both a kick returner and a receiver, but also that third dimension as a running back. They'll do a lot of motioning with the Minnesota Vikings with Norv Turner. And what we saw on Sunday for Minnesota against St. Louis was him coming in motion and taking a handoff, much like Julian Edelman did against the Dolphins for a couple of gains with what they call the jet sweep, a play that's going to become very, very popular, especially with guys like Patterson and a former Viking, Percy Harvin, for the Seattle Seahawks. But beyond that, he also took a ball on a sweep, a little toss sweep for Minnesota out of the backfield, and a very dangerous guy. Again, only three carries and yet more than 100 yards. And in the passing game, with Matt Cassel as the quarterback and Norv Turner calling plays, maybe not a passing offense that necessarily is going to look to stretch the ball deep down the sidelines, but nonetheless, Patterson gives them that long ball threat, and he's the kind of guy that, of course, can make a catch and then has the breakaway speed to turn a short pickup into a long gain, like Josh Gordon for Cleveland last year, a guy that Norv Turner used very successfully while calling plays for the Browns. So just a few thoughts on James White of the Patriots and Cordero Patterson for the Minnesota Vikings. Coming up, we'll get the thoughts of the voice of the Vikings, Paul Allen, and hear his insights on a team he knows extremely well. Speaking of the Vikings and the Patriots and personnel matters, we got the practice report today, and we're going to run down the state of several Patriots today. And there were no players held out of practice, which is good news, of course. There were several that were limited in their participation, including Michael Buchanan. An ankle injury kept him out of the season opener, but he's listed today with limited participation for the Pats. Likewise, for Rob Gronkowski, Chris Jones, Silver Salinga, and Ryan Wendell. Wendell listed on the practice report with a knee injury, limited participation. We did see Ryan see some action in Miami at center for the Pats when they moved Dan Connolly off that spot to guard. Wendell didn't play as much, it seemed, in the second half, and perhaps that's the reason why. Chris Jones, of course, like Michael Buchanan, was a healthy scratch for the was an unhealthy scratch, I should say, for the Patriots, out with Buchanan dealing with an ankle problem, and Jones likewise, an ankle injury that he suffered very early in the preseason. As for the Minnesota Vikings, you know, unlike the Dolphins, this Minnesota team, with a deeper rotation, it seems, at a couple of different spots defensively. But one guy who is questionable on defense right now, didn't participate for Miami in today's practice, is tackle Sharif Floyd. He's a young guy who has a very big upside for Minnesota. And though Mike Zimmer likes to use all eight at times, certainly 6-7 defensive linemen in a rotation and get those guys a lot of snaps per game, Sharif Floyd is one of the mainstays inside for Minnesota. He did not participate today because of a shoulder injury. Xavier Rhodes, a cornerback who's been dealing with a groin problem. And then there's Brandon Watts, who's a linebacker, who today did not participate in practice with a knee injury. So you've got everybody on the Patriots, at least with limited participation today. But while the Vikings have three players who did not participate, they also have several who had limited participation and one who's coming back from an injury, Jabari Price, a cornerback with a hamstring problem, had full participation. One guy that we note on there, who was back in practice today on a limited basis, fullback Zach Line. Line did not play last week, and the Vikings, like the Patriots, a team that utilizes a fullback, though in the Minnesota case, more so perhaps with a fullback to help lead the way for Adrian Peterson. We're closing in on the final half hour of our show here as we look ahead to the Vikings and the Patriots this coming Sunday, of course, with a 1 o'clock kickoff in Minnesota. It is a kickoff that will unfold outdoors because the Vikings are in the process of having a new stadium built in Minneapolis. The yet-to-be-named stadium will be the site of Super Bowl 52. The Vikings, of course, played for so long in the Metrodome. Before that, played at Metropolitan Stadium, and even before that, played at the University of Minnesota. And as they go back to campus this week to entertain the Patriots at TCF Bank Stadium, they're going to search for their first outdoor home win since 1981. Now, of course, you're saying, well, they've been playing in a dome stadium, so it only makes sense, though they did play an outdoor game at the University of Minnesota in 2010. You might recall the circumstances in a typical winter storm in the Twin Cities. A lot of snow fell on Minneapolis, and in fact, the roof of the Metrodome collapsed. It was a roof that was, in essence, a parachute inflated above the structure of that stadium. Like the old RCA Dome in Indianapolis, or for college fans and graduates of Syracuse University, the Carrier Dome in upstate New York. But the Metrodome had problems, again, with the roof collapsing back in 2010, so the Vikings played a game at the University of Minnesota's brand-new stadium, and now the Vikings are going to be there on a full-time basis this season for their home games, next season as well. The Vikings, of course, changing venues and getting ready for the brand new stadium. And as we noted at the top, changing head coaches, Mike Zimmer was hired as the former defensive coordinator from the Cincinnati Bengals to be the head coach, replacing Leslie Frazier and the Vikings, only a couple of years removed from a playoff appearance for the Vikings, but after they endured a 5-win campaign in 2013. And Mike Zimmer, as we've talked about, is a guy who seemingly has changed the culture of that team. He's a guy with a very well-respected resume as a defensive coordinator, and it certainly seems has put his imprint on the Vikings defensively. We're going to talk more Minnesota Vikings football with the voice of the Vikes, Paul Allen, in a short while. We do want to spend a little bit of time again to revisit last Sunday's game between the Patriots and the Miami Dolphins. We will do just that after we take another time out here on the Bob Soucy Show on Patriots.com.
We're NRG, and we're a new kind of energy company, one that's hard at work making the most of renewable sources of energy. One whose solar energy is helping power football stadiums across the country. One that's developing new technologies that can one day turn your home into its own source of power and put you in charge of how you use it. We're putting that power into your hands. NRG, the power to change life.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99. At a Microsoft store near you. Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99. At a Microsoft store near you.
And we welcome you back to the Bob Soucy Show here on Patriots.com, continuing from the Subway Fresh broadcast studios at Gillette Stadium, inviting you to dial in at 855-PATS-500 or on the Ace Ticket hotline at 508-298-0398. And, of course, we're looking ahead to the Patriots matchup in Week 2 of the Minnesota Vikings, the Pats at 0-1, the Vikings at 1-0 in a short while, about 5-6 minutes away. We'll talk with Paul Allen, longtime voice of the Vikings. Just how Minnesota's been able to engineer a 4-0 preseason and then keep the St. Louis Rams out of the end zone with new head coach Mike Zimmer building a solid defense once again. Now he's the head coach, of course, but in Minnesota in his inaugural season in support of that great offensive skill talent and Adrian Peterson, Cordarrelle Patterson, Kyle Rudolph, and with Matt Cassel engineering that offense under coordinator Norv Turner. We'll get into all that with Paul Allen in just a short while. Do want to go back and briefly reflect on a couple of other thoughts with regards to the Patriots' loss to the Miami Dolphins in the season opener and how the Pats can adjust moving forward. We've talked about the scheme and questions that people have, but as Bill Belichick said in the wake of Sunday's game, in most respects, if not all, was really about technique. And Scott Zolak, who joined us a bit earlier as the former Patriots quarterback and my partner on our radio broadcasts on the Pats Radio Network, discussed how that is something that's fixable, and that is some cause for optimism. Of course, there is concern, and rightfully so, especially as the Patriots go into Minnesota, because the Vikings have a daunting pass rush, and they have a very good linebacker in Chad Greenway, really leads a good, solid group there, and they've got a safety in Harrison Smith, who does a great job in quarterbacking the back end of their defense. And then on the flip side, of course, we talked about Peterson and Patterson, a good offensive line, and a tight end in Kyle Rudolph, along with a veteran receiver like Greg Jennings, who's a dangerous complementary part for that offense, all under a head coach who really knows how to use all of his weapons in Norv Turner. And for the Pats, they definitely have their work cut out for them going into Sunday's game. And, of course, there's that third phase. The Vikings very, very solid in the kicking game, both covering, converting, and as well returning kicks. So the Pats have a lot to work on in preparation for that contest. And speaking of the special teams unit for the Patriots, they had a breakdown right away after a three-and-out series to begin the new season. A low snap that was mishandled by Ryan Allen somewhat, and poor protection up the middle allowed the Dolphins to block a punt from Allen and take over the 15-yard line. And shortly thereafter, Miami was on the board with a touchdown catch from Lamar Miller, a running back who received from Ryan Tannehill, much like the Dolphins struck against the Patriots several different times in 2013. So Miami had the early advantage, but the Patriots were able to mount a long march. And Tom Brady completed all six passes on the Pats' second series of the season, one of which set up the Pats with Shane Vereen on the receiving end, part of that three consecutive snap sequence when Vereen either received or rushed. And here was the Patriot running back on the final play of that series and that sequence.
Marine marked down at the two. It's a second and goal to go. Shea in the lone setback takes the handoff, runs it up the middle with a dive for a Patriots touchdown.
And, of course, for the Patriots, with that tying score after the point after by Stephen Gostkowski, still we wonder, when would Rob Gronkowski have an impact on the game? And it wasn't long before he did for the Pats, back in the end zone for his 43rd career scoring catch from Tom Brady late in the first quarter.
Amendola starts in motion left to right. He joins Edelman there. Brady drops back. He's looking left. He rolls right. He looks across the middle. He throws to Gronkowski. He has a touchdown for the Patriots.
Who's back? The big boy. My gosh, talk about a catch radius.
That big catch radius for Rob Gronkowski, of course, nearly surpassing the kicking range of anybody in the NFL, but not Stephen Gostkowski. In between the two touchdowns, Gostkowski drilled a 47-yard field goal for the Pats. He would later add a 45-yarder just before halftime. Gostkowski with 6 seconds left for the Patriots, answering a Miami field goal. So the Pats had that 10-point lead, and although they did not fully capitalize on three Miami turnovers, cashing in for just 10 points off those three Miami giveaways, interestingly enough, the one touchdown series the Patriots did have resulting from a turnover began inside their 10. So the longest potential march was the one that came to fruition for the Pats after those turnovers by the Dolphins. But nonetheless, the Patriots had to be feeling good, as did we watching it unfold in the broadcast booth, Scott Zolak and me, with a 20-10 advantage, all things considered, given the way the game had started with that blocked punt, and of course what took place as well for the Pats, not converting any points out of that final turnover before the Dolphins got the field goal from Sturgis, and the Patriots would answer with a field goal from Gostkowski. But the second half was all Miami's. At the top of the program, touchdown, the Dolphins' ability to gain a lot of extra yards off contact, the Patriots' inability to really sustain anything offensively, mixed in with more breakdowns in the kicking game, a penalty to start the third quarter with an offsides that cost the Pats 8 yards of field position, later covering a punt that was short, bounced off the turf. The gunner for the Patriots, in that case Don Jones, overran the play, and Jarvis Landry picked up 16 yards on his return for the Dolphins. So again, those kind of plays seem to happen frequently, mixed in with the problems the Pats were experiencing on both lines, offensively and defensively. So they enabled the Dolphins to come back, and Miami had drawn within 20-13 midway through the third quarter when Ryan Tannehill looked for Mike Wallace in the end zone.
Shotgun snap to Tannehill, short drop, firing down the middle. The pass is going to be caught for a touchdown. An outstanding play by Wallace to go up and get it for Miami.
So Mike Wallace caught that pass deflected by Darrell Revis, and the Dolphins eventually tied the game on the extra point by Caleb Sturgis. Sturgis would kick a 22-yard field goal late in the third quarter, the 2:38 mark of that third period, to give the Dolphins the lead at 23-20. But what would follow would be another instance in which the Pats really failed to capitalize offensively. Despite all the struggles up until that point, the Patriots still had an opportunity in that game, down by only three, not only to get themselves even with the Dolphins, but certainly take the lead, because they took over at the Miami 45-yard line. Defense did its job for the Patriots offense, again, at the Miami 45, and the Pats ran three plays, and they netted 1 yard. There was a penalty in the mix for the Patriots in that sequence, and for the Pats, they eventually had to punt to the Dolphins. Miami, meanwhile, was able to answer with a 12-play, 70-yard march. There were five first downs for the Dolphins before they set up a first and goal to go, so in all, six first downs for the Dolphins on that drive. And no Sean Moreno, of course, was running exceedingly well with tremendous effort from Miami, breaking a lot of tackles on the way to 134 yards. And yet the Patriots, if they could keep the Dolphins out of the end zone, despite all that work by Moreno and Miami, could still be in a one-possession game. The margin was 3 at the time. Time running out, 3.5 minutes to go in the fourth. We've seen the Patriots come back certainly all too often to give up any on them or to give up all hope with 3.5 minutes to go, if they could keep Miami out of the end zone and maintain a one-score differential. But with the difference at three, again, the Dolphins turn to Moreno.
3:36 to go. Trips a line wide side left. Moreno to the quarterback's right. Tannehill off the snap. Hands it off to Moreno. Hit in the backfield. Breaks the tackle. Runs up the middle. Lunging to the goal line. He's in for a touchdown. Oh.
And that, in essence, was the ball game and the story of really the entire contest, at least in the second half, with the Dolphins eventually winning by the 33-20 score. Miami had 9.5 minutes of time of possession on their side in the third quarter alone, 8:48 time of possession in the fourth quarter. And when you talk about the heat and humidity of South Florida. The temperature on the field, the real feel, certainly at or above 100 degrees. It was a game time temp in the upper 80s with a high humidity. I know it's not an excuse, but it certainly became much more of a factor in the second half, the longer the Patriots defense was on the field. And what we saw was the Dolphins really just established command up front in that game and take advantage of all those extra yards after contact from Knowshon Moreno and company, and eventually beat the Patriots by the 33-20 score. So now the Pats find themselves again preparing for a Minnesota Vikings team off to the 1-0 start in the regular season after an unbeaten preseason under head coach Mike Zimmer, and of course under the watchful eyes, and as described by the voice of Paul Allen, the longtime voice of the Vikings and as well a talk show host in the Twin Cities. Paul Allen to join us momentarily here on the Bob Soucy Show on Patriots.com radio. And Paul, a guy who knows football exceptionally well, knows what the winning culture is like when he's around it, and we're going to ask him if Mike Zimmer has indeed cultivated that for the Vikings as the new head coach of Minnesota. Paul, thanks for joining us.
My man, what's going on?
Well, we're talking Vikings here, and Mike Zimmer first and foremost. I mean, he's discussed his desire to make this a tough football team, a mistake-free football team. The Patriots certainly know him firsthand as a defensive coordinator. Just last year, it was his defense in Cincinnati that stopped Tom Brady's streak of 52 straight games with a touchdown pass and held the Pats without a touchdown to just two field goals in that win. What are your first impressions of Mike Zimmer and his organization, his program, as he says, in Minnesota?
Well, you're right with your assessment, and he definitely is a perfectionist. I mean, we just beat St. Louis 34-6, and then after the game, he rattled off five things that he knew initially, having not watched the game back, could have been better. Most of them defensively too. You know, the thing is with the Vikings is last year the defense was historically bad. It gave up the most passing touchdowns in the NFL. And the team blew five games in the final minute of games and finishing 5-10-1. So there had to be a lot of changes, and not just changes from a personnel standpoint. They've done that with defensive tackle Linval Joseph, cornerback Captain Munnerlin from Carolina, and they drafted Anthony Barr 9th overall. But there had to be a philosophical change. And, you know, he has adopted an attack-first defense. And last week against Sean Hill and Austin Davis, it worked extremely well. Now, obviously, we're looking at a different creature this week with a cinch Hall of Famer in Tom Brady. But the defense is ramping up and getting better week by week, and we'll see what happens Sunday.
Well, Paul, you know the Patriots had a lot of offensive line problems on Sunday against the Miami Dolphins, and we know that Mike Zimmer's defense often is loaded up in the so-called A-gap. I mean, they'll put guys over the center. He did it in Cincinnati, and it seems as though the Vikings are willing to do that. Do you expect them to bring a lot of pressure up the middle?
Well, that's an excellent point because, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years of calling the team's games, and, you know, this comes with all due respect to former head coach Leslie Frazier, you know, who is a good defensive mind. We never really saw defensive end Brian Robinson stand up over the A-gap, or really even leading tackler and linebacker Chad Greenway do the same thing, and Anthony Barr did it quite frequently against St. Louis last week too. So you're right about him recognizing the importance of flooding the middle and realizing that middle pressure is quite honestly the toughest place for a quarterback to deal with pressure. The thing that he does with his rushing schemes is it's oxymoronic in that it's a controlled chaos. And it's very unpredictable. In fact, in St. Louis's fourth offensive play of the season and our first chance to go nickel defense, he had 10 guys on the line of scrimmage. And safety Harrison Smith showed blitz from outside the left defensive end, and he came. Captain Munnerlin showed blitz from outside of the right defensive end, and Sean Hill thought that's where the blitz was coming from. So he moved his tail back over there, and then Munnerlin backed off. And even though Zimmer's team rushed five, and St. Louis had six to protect it, there were still two guys who came in unscathed. So he prides himself on unpredictability. There's a risk factor to it where when you run into a guy probably like Tom Brady, you know, and then after that we get Drew Brees, then we get Matt Ryan the week after that, then Aaron Rodgers. I mean, seriously, four of the best quarterbacks in the NFL in the next four games. You know, you are bound to make some mistakes with this aggressive approach. But nevertheless, if the adversary is not ready for it, their quarterback is going to get hit.
Well, on the other side of the ball, it has to seem like uncontrolled chaos for a lot of defenses trying to tackle Cordarrelle Patterson and Adrian Peterson both. How has one complemented the other? We know about the longtime outstanding running back, but the dynamic Patterson there as well as a running threat and a receiving threat.
Yeah, and they do play off each other. Again, a brilliant point, because there were plays last week where Patterson went in motion and they would either fake a handoff to Patterson, and then watching the coaches tape back, you would see linebackers and safeties go the way of Cordero, and then Adrian would get it. And even though Adrian would go for 7-12, he still had a hole at the point of impact. And then when they would fake it to Adrian and go to Cordero, the same thing would happen. They very much play off each other in the rushing game. You know, Cordero with his deep passing skills is still a very, very much a work in progress. And with offensive coordinator Norv Turner here, everybody knows what he did with Josh Gordon last year. Cordero's not that kind of guy. He has not developed into a big time over the top threat, but, he scored a touchdown in 6 consecutive games. He has 4 rushing touchdowns over the last 6 regular season games. And last week's 67-yard run from the tailback spot was a thing of beauty. He has spectacular vision. He's very difficult to bring down. And he just has a lot of natural ability.
And, Paul, the Patriots know full well what Norv Turner can do with a good tight end. We saw it last year when he was the offensive coordinator for Cleveland. Really, the Browns are in great position to win at Gillette Stadium, in great part because of the work of the Browns tight end. And Kyle Rudolph is a guy who certainly, I think, is one of the league's best. Some believe he was underused in Minnesota in years past. What are your thoughts about his role on this team and how he becomes another complimentary piece?
Kyle had a really good rookie year. Last year he broke his foot, so he missed half the season. And he was having a decent season. After he broke his foot, you know, and per the instructions, I think, of general manager Rick Spielman and new head coach Mike Zimmer, Kyle lost 15 pounds. And he was our best receiver in the preseason. And he had a touchdown in what was kind of a nondescript performance against St. Louis. But Kyle has become a better point of attack run blocker too, and you know, to become multifaceted, that's something Kyle's going to need to do to get the respect of some of the tight ends, big tight ends in the NFL. You know, I certainly never would put him in the category of Jimmy Graham, Rob Gronkowski when he's healthy, or Thomas with Denver, but he's getting closer, and he's a lot faster than people think. And given he was a star basketball player in Cincinnati, and he really has that innate rebounding thing to him, mm-hmm. where when you get inside the red zone and you fade to Kyle, it's really difficult to stop him.
With Paul Allen, voice of the Minnesota Vikings, let me ask about the quarterback, Matt Cassel. Whether he's a placeholder or not for Teddy Bridgewater, nonetheless, he's a guy who's well-respected by the Patriots. They have first-hand knowledge of his work ethic and what he did here as an understudy to Tom Brady, and in particular, of course, as Brady's fill-in in 2008. What are your thoughts about his development this year and his role under Norv Turner?
I knew when they gave him the new 2-year deal after Norv Turner became the offensive coordinator, I knew he was the perfect quarterback for what Turner wants to do. And I really never bought into the offseason hyperbole that Bridgewater was going to beat him out of the job. You know, Teddy had a kind of an uneven debut in his first preseason game, and then he was fantastic the rest of the way. But Matt was never going to lose the job. You know, when you have a first-year head coach and a 30-year offensive coordinator who's been a head coach, they're going to go with the guy who they can trust and who can look at defenses and have a grasp as to what's coming. Now, he's not as mobile or he's not as athletic as Teddy, but, you know, Matt kind of, he kind of played the game manager role at St. Louis. I expect them to have a different offensive game plan this week against New England, but against that defensive line last week, you know, Matt recognized that pride goes before the fall. So let's make sure Robert Quinn does not wreck the game. And let's make sure that we don't give up strip sacks to a team that's extremely good, causing fumbles, specifically of the quarterback and running backs in the backfield. So he handled it beautifully. That was a good step. I said into the season, I expect Cassel to take every snap this year unless he gets hurt, and really there's no change to the plan.
Hey, Paul Allen, voice of the Minnesota Vikings, talk for a couple of more minutes about the atmosphere one should expect on Sunday back outdoors on campus at the University of Minnesota. What's the sense that the people in Minnesota have about this team? I know, again, Mike Zimmer has talked about, you know, wanting them to recognize all the qualities of his football team and the effort the team's going to give them. Are they responding? I know it's early, but after 4-0 record in the preseason and that resounding win over the Rams, what's the sense in the community there?
It'll be good Sunday. You know, I could tell in the 2 preseason games, the first one against Oakland and the second against Arizona, first of all, they sold out, and most of the people came, you know, despite the weather being uneven here in this part of the country most of the year. People still gave up their evenings to come watch preseason football, and they were loud. It'll be like that Sunday. The public is very excited about this team because they have not seen a defense attack the way this defense has attacked, quite honestly, in well over a decade. And with offensive components like Adrian Peterson, Kyle Rudolph, Cordarrelle Patterson, Greg Jennings had six catches and some big third down catches in the win against St. Louis, and the fact that the offensive line has now been intact a couple of years, you know, this could be a team that scores a bunch of points and a team that does not allow many points. At least that's the recipe. And after one, it looked to be good. So the crowd was very disappointed in the way things finished last year at 5-10-1. It was kind of an unorganized 5-10-1 with some things happening at the ends of games that just quite honestly were unacceptable. And thus change came, and so far the team looks pretty good.
You know, I look back at last year early in the season when the Carolina Panthers started to turn things around. I know Ron Rivera had been there for a couple of previous years, but really a game that validated, I think, his third year, and that team, it seemed, was their win on Monday night against the Patriots. When the Patriots traveled down to Charlotte, you could very much see and sense that it was the so-called statement game. I think that term's overused a lot, and I'm not sure it always exists, if it's ever existed in the NFL. But this game against the Patriots, you know, one of the solid organizations in the NFL for so long, how is it being viewed in Minnesota?
It's huge, man. It's really big. You know, again, with we go to New Orleans a week from Sunday, then we have Atlanta here. I think Atlanta's winnable, and quite honestly, I think they're all winnable with as good as this team I think is going to be this year, and really in under the radar like fashion. But you mentioned Carolina. That's interesting because last year Carolina came here, and Mr. Rivera had been hell bent on making Cam Newton a pocket passer. And they scrapped that whole thing against us and absolutely destroyed us. And Castle had a terrible game. But, you know, Matt had a couple of bad games against elite defenses last year, Carolina and Zimmer, Cincinnati Bengals, in large part because the defense was just so bad that they just got so far behind that they had to be a pass-first operation, and it was super predictable. Now, this weekend, you know, it's tough to say from a statement game standpoint with 14 to go that they have to have this one. But with the way they operated and how professionally they operated in the second half against St. Louis, I think fans really want to use this as a barometer to see how far the progress has come. And I think if you get the new head coach to open a vein, he would say this defense is about 60 or 70% as far along as I want it to be, that there still are more tricks up the proverbial sleeve. Now, the offense has been pretty good every step of the way. Anytime Tom Brady and Bill Belichick come to your building, there's going to be a certain atmosphere that's different than the majority of the games you have on your schedule, probably outside of Green Bay and Chicago for us. So with this little team up here in the cornfields that everybody had picked to finish last in the NFC North, or at least most people did, this is an opportunity to be acid tested for class, and hopefully they're up to the challenge.
Paul, can't wait to see you on Sunday. Looking forward to getting out to Minnesota. Thanks so much for your time.
You'll enjoy the stadium, and you'll enjoy the atmosphere. Thank you.
And believe it or not, after going to Miami last weekend, I know I'll enjoy the weather.
Well, I know, but that's going to be a problem for us because it's not going to be 100 degrees. It'll be in the 60s, maybe the low 70s, which means certain members of the Patriots defense will probably not be as tired at the end of this game as they seem to be at the end of the last game.
And you just said what really I can't say here because, you know, you don't want it to be viewed as an excuse, but it certainly was a factor. Paul, thanks so much again.
Okay, see you later.
All right, take care. Paul Allen, voice of the Vikings, and again in our final moment here on Patriots.com radio, our thanks to Paul as well as Scott Zolak, Jackie Britton, and especially Matthew Slater who joined us on the show. Don't forget, of course, every Wednesday we're on live from 4 to 6. You can also download the podcast on Patriots.com and as well through the various resources on the internet to download all things that are associated with PFW in progress, Patriots.com radio. John Rook, of course, hosts the playbook here, and we've got the Bob Soucy Show on Wednesdays from 4 to 6 live, as noted, and we hope you'll join us next week. And with regards to the Vikings game on Sunday, as you just heard from someone who knows the Vikings extremely well, Paul Allen, it's going to be a tough task for the Pats, no doubt about it, but they go in, I think, with not only a great amount of respect for Minnesota, but as well well the institutional knowledge here that the Patriots have been in this position before and have been able to bounce back so many times. It's been extremely rare, as you know, for the Pats to experience back-to-back defeats, especially to begin a new season. And for the Patriots, as difficult as the challenge will be in Minnesota, one would expect a much different kind of performance against the Vikings. And as Paul just said, and I think it is worth noting one more time, one of the factors will be that the conditions will be very different in Minneapolis on Sunday, and perhaps the defensive performance for the Patriots will be very different as well. But they certainly have a lot of things to shore up, but the Pats have got to work on that already, and they'll do so again the next couple of days. Thanks so much for tuning in as well, and we'll continue to work to get better on this show, and I hope you'll join us next Wednesday. For our producer, Kevin Collins, I'm Bob Soucy. So long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Bob Soucy Show, exclusively on Patriots.com Radio.
Sets up with a throw to the right side, catch made by Edelman, turns to the end zone, and he runs it past the five, he dives to the end zone, touchdown, and the lead for the Patriots!
Bob will be back next Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. with the latest news and reaction from this week's game, as well as a preview of the Patriots' next opponent.
Hand off Ridley, runs it right, Ridley dives to the goal line, he's in again, touchdown, Patriots!
Log on to Patriots.com anytime to find the latest Bob Soucy Show podcasts, as well as the very latest news and information on your favorite team.
Shotgun snap to Manning, play fake, a throw to the near side, ball picked off by Logan Ryan. Diving, break on the ball,
he's got it!
As he stepped in front of Eric Decker,
he's got it!
Patriots take over!
This place is berserk!
We look forward to hearing from you on the next edition of the Bob Soucy Show.